John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, November 8, 2010. On Monday, the Foreign Minister of Germany visited Gaza and urged Israel to lift its blockade of the Strip. However, he refused to meet Hamas because its refusal to renounce violence and accept Israel's right to exist. Hamas officials slammed the move as insulting. In another issue, Israeli media reported on Monday morning that, for the first time since the beginning of the Second Intifada in 2000, army records indicate that there are no more wanted Palestinians in the northern part of the Gaza Strip and only a few in the southern part. Also on Monday, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said in a peace conference in Abu Dhabi that Palestinians will declare a sovereign state within a year if negotiations with Israel fail. In Jerusalem, Israeli sources revealed on Monday that a group of Israeli fundamentalists attacked last week a Chilean tourist while he was walking through a park in Jerusalem after suspecting that he was an Arab. On Sunday, a mosque was destroyed by Israeli police on the Palestinian Bedouin town of Rafat in southern Israel. The mosque was considered to be built without a permit, according to the Israeli Land Administration. Around 1,000 people gathered to protest the demolition, and five of them were arrested. Also on Sunday, Abdullah Abu Rahma, leader of the nonviolent movement in Palestine, currently imprisoned in an Israeli detention camp for incitement, faces two more new hearings as Israeli prosecutors attempt to increase his sentence beyond the one-year term he is now serving. Meanwhile, a document revealed on Monday show a deliberate policy by Israeli government that ignores the daily needs of the Gaza population and misses calculation of amounts of food needed there. Those policies leave the Gaza residents without amount of foods and supplies that are enough for near starvation level. This document, which was made by Israeli officials, describes those policies as putting the people of Gaza on a diet. And that's all for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You have been listening to Palestine Today, a service by the International Middle East Media Center, imemc.org. This report was brought to you by Ghassan Banoura and Hussam Kassis.
is reporting the death of an occupation soldier from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed area in eastern Afghanistan on Sunday, the 7th of November. NATO is reporting the death of an occupation soldier from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed area in eastern Afghanistan on Sunday, the 7th of November. NATO is reporting the death of an occupation soldier from an IED attack in an undisclosed area in eastern Afghanistan on Monday, the 8th of November. Afghanistan, Friday, an Afghan soldier reportedly shot and killed two U.S. Marines on guard duty. The Taliban claims him as a defector. Afghanistan, Saturday, two more oil tank trucks serving NATO troops were burned by insurgents. Pakistan, yesterday, three snitches were publicly executed by Taliban fighters lined up and shot for spying for the U.S. Before the executions, the fighters asked residents to, quote, come and witness the fate of U.S. spies. Pakistan, last week, three drone strikes carried out without the permission of the Pakistani government killed at least 12 people. These drone strikes rely on intelligence from snitches like the ones executed yesterday. Britain, yesterday, another torture scandal has come out of Iraq, this time involving British troops. Over 200 former inmates at a British detention center in Iraq are reporting starvation, sleep deprivation, sexual abuse, sensory deprivation, and even threats of execution. Baghdad, Iraq, Sunday, two Katyusha rockets landed in a fortified green zone, while a security force defused more rockets ready for firing in Baghdad on Sunday, a security source told Azwat al-Iraq news agency. Babel Province, Iraq, last week, two rockets landed on a U.S. military base in the area of Al-Mashroud. U.S. troops swept the area in response, seizing one more rocket. Who says U.S. combat operations in Iraq are over? Karbala, Iraq, yesterday, a car bomb left at least 10 killed and 38 injured. Iranian pilgrims appear to have been the targets as Sunni Shiite sectarian warfare grows. Najaf, Iraq, just hours later, another car bomb went off near buses filled with Iranian pilgrims in Najaf, killing three and wounding 10 more people. UK-based Iraqi Archbishop Athanasios Dawood is expected to call for Iraqi Christians to leave the country, presumably because escalating religious warfare has made the country unsafe. Mr. Barack Obama, does this sound to you like the surge made peace in Iraq? Does this sound like a viable model for Afghanistan? If not, now is the time to throw in the towel. Bring all the troops home today.
In Afghanistan, the CIA has set up a counterinsurgency base near the Pakistan border, dubbed Firebase Lily, to deploy secret paramilitary units against the Taliban. The force of trained Afghans, officially called counterterrorism pursuit teams, are active in hot zones in Pakistan and Afghanistan. According to the Washington Post, the paramilitary force was created to reduce the CIA's reliance on Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence Agency that is seen in many quarters as compromised and too close to the Taliban. The existence of the CIA pursuit teams was disclosed in Bob Woodward's recent book, Obama Wars, and confirmed by field reports from Afghanistan disclosed by WikiLeaks. The military field logs from Afghanistan describe a range of paramilitary operations by the secret teams. These activities include intelligence gathering, the capture of insurgent leaders, and engaging the Taliban in firefights along the Afghan-Pakistan border. The CIA began organizing this secret force soon after the American-led invasion of Afghanistan in late 2001. And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again.
those army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
Conspicuously absent from all the debates and political advertisements inundating the airwaves before the November 2, 2010 congressional midterm election was any discussion about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan from any perspective. Suicide bombings and massacres are continuing in Iraq, overwhelmingly affecting civilians, while the Iraqi government has been deadlocked since elections this past March. The number of Americans dying in Iraq has dropped sharply, while in Afghanistan, 2010 has been by far the deadliest year of the nine-year-old conflict, with 413 Americans killed so far. Yet, neither incumbents nor their challengers were talking about the wars, and the media have almost universally ignored the issue during the 2010 campaign. Aaron Hughes, organizing team leader with Iraq Veterans Against the War, served in the Illinois National Guard from 2002 to 2006 and was deployed to Iraq for 15 months in 2003 to 2004, driving a supply truck. His original six-month tour of duty was extended three times. After returning to the U.S., Hughes joined Iraq Veterans Against the War, which now has 2,000 members, including a growing number of vets from the Afghan War. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Hughes about the phenomenon of political and media war amnesia in this year's election and its implications.
I recently watched The Daily Show, and the president was on The Daily Show just the other day, and he came on and he talked about why he won the election. And he brought up all these different types of reform, like health care reform. And during that little segment, he did not mention the fact that he won or had ran on an anti-war platform. And he didn't once bring up the war, nor did John Stewart. And, you know, on a really personal level, I just found it just insulting or dismissive. I mean, I understand that he has political points and he's in the middle of a majorly contested election where the Democrats are trying to hold on to seats, and you know, I understand all of those politics, but to not even acknowledge these wars are going on, it doesn't seem to acknowledge the sacrifices and the loss that's been going on. You know, the repression of these issues, I think, is why the suicide rate is so high and why the self-destruction of veterans on their return is so high, because no one is acknowledging these wars. You know, outside of people's political perspectives on the wars, the fact that people aren't even acknowledging that they're taking place and that people are losing their lives and having to kill people, it's just a disgrace. I think it's really saddening to me. You know, one of IVAW's main positions at Iraq Veterans Against the War right now is we just launched a campaign called Operation Recovery Stop the Deployment of Traumatized Troops. Because right now, a bare minimum of 20% of the soldiers, according to the DOD's own statistics, are already diagnosed with PTSD or military sexual trauma or traumatic brain injury. And they're being redeployed and redeployed and redeployed. And they're being redeployed because the military's numbers are so low that they keep having to rely on the same number of soldiers to fight these occupations. And my perspective is, if this country isn't behind these wars, why are we keep sending these young men and women off to fight them?
Have you seen any response yet to your campaign by any branch of government?
At our campaign announcement on October 7th, the anniversary of the Afghanistan invasion, our campaign was brought up at the White House briefing, and the response was to refer to the Department of Defense regulations. And according to the Department of Defense's own regulations, they are violating those regulations. And we know that we're in an uphill battle to enforce these regulations, but the fact that no one in Congress or Senate is actively trying to enforce the Department of Defense to hold up to their own regulations.
Aaron Hughes, why do you think no politicians are talking about the wars?
When the wars are so unpopular publicly that there's not a right answer for a politician to take. And so it becomes a political discourse. It's one where what they're saying, no matter what they say about the war, it's not going to improve their ratings. Whether they say that they believe in the war, or they say they don't believe in the war, or whether they talk about the complexities of the war, no matter what, acknowledging the war is not going to help them win the election in any direction, especially with over 70%, somewhat of 70% of the population not believing, not agreeing with these wars. So I just think it's a politically problematic thing for politicians to be bringing up if they are trying to win an election.
What will Iraq Veterans Against the War be doing after the election? Will you continue focusing on your Operation Recovery Project or other things?
We have a multiplicity of projects that we are working on, but our focus as an organization right now is Operation Recovery, and we're focusing on this because we just find it to be the most egregious act of the military to continuously redeploy these troops that it knows and is aware of that they have already been diagnosed with these conditions. And the fact that they give them prescription drugs and redeploy them, I think is extremely problematic. And we're working in that practice. I don't know anybody that can say they're for the deployment of traumatized troops, and we're hoping to end that practice. So that's our focus. But we also do work around truth and recruiting, trying to inform youth about the realities of serving within the military. And we also do solidarity projects. We work with U.S. Labor Against the War to support Iraqi union working rights.
Is there anything you want to add about this situation where wars are being ignored, basically?
I think this just shows us as individuals that aren't necessarily a part of the political system that we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of coming together and raising our voices about this issue, because if we don't force the politicians to take on the war, these wars are just going to drag on, and we're going to force more and more service members to lose their lives. And the question is, what for?
That was Aaron Hughes of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Contact the group by calling area code 217-898-9083 or visit their website at ivaw.org.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQT Radio at Hushmail.com. WSQT Radio at Hushmail.com.
Claims of voter fraud have been a familiar refrain from Republican Party officials in recent elections. In 2010, as in past years, the GOP has charged that Democratic allied groups have systematically worked to allow non-citizens to vote or permit Democratic supporters to cast multiple ballots. When reports indicated that the number of Democrats voting in early balloting was higher than predicted, Dick Armey, who leads the Tea Party movement's patron group, Freedom Works, explained to Fox News that the higher number of Democrats voting was due to voter fraud, all said without a shred of evidence. The reality is, the high-pitched charges of widespread voter fraud are blatantly false. From October 2002 to September 2005, the Justice Department charged only 95 people nationwide with election fraud. 55 were convicted, with less than 20 convicted of casting illegal ballots. Instead, Republicans have used these dubious charges of voter fraud as a justification to employ the tactic of voter intimidation at polling places around the country, specifically targeting minority communities. As voting got underway in 2010, examples of this tactic emerged in Texas, where poll watchers, with ties to a Houston Tea Party group called True the Vote, were reported to have interfered with minority voters' right to cast ballots. Another Tea Party-linked group in Minnesota offered a $500 bounty to anyone providing tips about voter fraud. Elsewhere, flyers and robocalls deliberately misled Black and Latino voters about the date of the election or the documents required to vote. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Tova Wang, senior democracy fellow at the group Demos, who examines bogus claims of voter fraud and the real danger to democracy of unchallenged intimidation tactics targeting minority voters.
You have certain politicians and political groups and activists who run around screaming that voter fraud is, quote, an epidemic and, pervasive throughout the system, including in-person voter fraud at the polling place, which people must vigilantly guard against. And it's just an absolute canard. It's just not true. The number of cases of polling place voter fraud are incredibly low. I mean, it's, one thing that we all like to talk about in the voting rights world is how you have a better chance of getting hit by lightning than seeing an actual act of voter fraud committed to the polling place. That's how rare it is. And so this kind of thing is ginned up every election year, and what you have is then, people really having their faith in the system undermined and believing that the system is rigged against them, and it's really unhealthy for democracy. And it's really to sort of get the groups out there and doing these sort of voter fraud watch activities that then turn into really voter intimidation activities. And it's to enact policies such as, voter ID laws and proof of citizenship in order to register to vote laws that make it more difficult for perfectly eligible voters to take part in our democracy.
Tell us a bit about the details of some of the intimidation tactics that the Republican Party and their allies have been practicing at the polling places in previous years in terms of poll watchers with video cameras and otherwise challenging verbally various voters, particularly targeting minority communities.
Well, we have been seeing since at least the late 50s, actually all started with former Chief Justice Rehnquist in Arizona, this practice of challenging voters, and particularly in minority polling places, as to their eligibility to be voting or saying that they, back in those days, having them take some kind of reading test. But even, over the last many years, we see voter challenges at the polls based on very flimsy to no evidence of lack of eligibility in minority polling places in particular. And I have been concerned, frankly, over the last year that the Tea Party movement with, the level of anger and mistrust that they have in government and systems would find its way into the polling place. And that's exactly what's already happening, particularly in Texas, where they have a pretty lengthy early voting period. Tea Party groups have gotten together and have already allegedly been going to polling sites in predominantly minority neighborhoods, especially in the Houston area, and interfering with people's votes, confronting them, following them. Other groups around the country, I would say probably in about a dozen states, are encouraging members to sign up to be poll watchers and then encouraging them to do things that are right out of the classic playbook of voter intimidation throughout the years, such as you mentioned, photographing people at the polls, following them around, videotaping them, that sort of activity, which done in a very neutral way could be legal, but if it intimidates people at all, it's not legal. And I'm not sure even all these people who are engaging in this kind of activity even realize that they're sort of being encouraged to do this by people who should know better, but they may not know the rules and where the lines should be drawn.
Well, looking to the future, what can be done to rein in this kind of abhorrent anti-democratic activity, either at the local level with citizens organizing or in our legal system to really hold to account people who engage in this kind of awful activity?
The laws are very weak. I mean, I have written about challenge laws in particular a great deal and the need to strengthen state challenge laws so that it is more difficult to challenge a voter at the polling place. That if you're going to have individual citizens challenge other voters, which I don't think is a great idea in the first place, but make it clear that they have to have actual evidence that the person is not an eligible voter, either some kind of firsthand knowledge or documentary evidence. And in light of what's been going on this year, I think we're really going to have to do a review of our poll watcher laws. You know, we need to think about maybe limiting the number of poll watchers that are allowed to go to a single polling site, because one of the things we saw in Houston in the last couple weeks is, you know, sort of like these hordes of poll watchers, frankly mostly white, going into black communities and, you know, sort of surrounding the place, which in itself is, you know, not an ideal way to have the voting process work. And make really clear the rules for what poll watchers are and are not allowed to do. I think that we really need to take a look at our laws for some more clarity on that issue.
That was Tova Wang, Senior Democracy Fellow at the group Demos. Contact Demos by calling area code 212-633-1405 or visit their website at demos.org.
Well, DNA is natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one depended on another, and so the circle it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor. Cows, they grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
On the 7th of November, the American College of Toxicology met at the Baltimore Marriott Waterfront Hotel. At this convention were a number of animal research firms, including puppy killing Huntington Life Sciences, where undercover investigations have caught so-called researchers punching beagle puppies in the face and dissecting live monkeys with no painkillers. A blizzard of phone calls forced the hotel to agree never to host this convention again, but they refused to cancel, so animal rights protesters showed up outside.
Next to Lux and Liberty! On Shadow Puppet World, there we are!
Once again, we are here for the Marriott Hotel, because Marriott is hosting the American College of Toxicology! The American College of Toxicology! Bring conference! Brings together horrible vivisection leaders such as Huntington Life Sciences, Covance, and Charles River Laboratories. The Marriott has been made well aware of why we are here. The Marriott has been getting phone calls all this week with concerned citizens asking them nicely to cancel their contract with the American College of Toxicology. The Marriott and Ed Rosinsky has stated and has agreed to not host the American College of Toxicology again next year. Marriott and Ed Rosinsky, we're going to hold you accountable for this and check back. Keep on checking back and making sure that you don't let these monsters inside your hotel again. HLS! HLS!
At first, protesters used powerful bullhorns in front of the hotel, but Baltimore cops threatened to arrest them for sound equipment, even though there is no law prohibiting its use, and even tried to intimidate protesters out of recording this exchange.
Because we've heard that before, and I checked. I called various agencies, I called various services, and couldn't find those laws on the book.
Yeah, you can't use the amplifiers. You can stand here and do it. I don't know. Go get it in writing and bring it back to me, and then we'll talk about it, okay?
Ma'am, first of all,
I'm not giving you permission to tape me or take my picture, okay?
It's legal to tape police officers in a public spot.
Ma'am, I told you, I'm not giving you permission to tape me, okay?
You hear me asking for permission, you stupid cop?
This is a public area. You can't deny permission in a public area. If you don't want to be filmed in a public area, then you can't come to public area.
To do your thing here, but you cannot use the amplifiers.
What?
You cannot use
the
amplifiers, okay? And that's it.
What's the law then?
Disorderly conduct. People pay to come here to sleep, okay? To sleep. This is a hotel, all right? Doesn't matter if it's 2 p.m. or 2 a.m. If they pay to sleep, that's what they're here to do. If you want to do your demonstration, that's fine, but you cannot use the horns to do it.
This is
the bottom line.
This is for zoning now. This is zoned as a business area, and so...
Well, they don't have a law. Like, you'd ask us to bring a law because he says we're violating a law.
All those threats didn't work. You just heard those cops right here. The protests went on for at least a half hour after that confrontation. In the Baltimore Marriott Waterfront Hotel, the American College of Toxicology, and for Huntington Life Sciences, there's no sleep for the wicked.
The roof is on fire. We don't need no water. Let the mother burn, burn, mother.
The day after Halloween, two speed cameras in Maryland were set on fire and destroyed. One in Gaithersburg, one in Germantown. Each destroyed camera is a $40,000 bite for the predatory county government that owns them and or their insurance company. A private company called ACS runs the cameras, and in Montgomery County has paid 40% of every ticket in contravention of Maryland state law. The government owns the camera, profits from the tickets, and is insured against the destruction of these scam machines by angry citizens. Already the cameras are losing money as people memorize their locations. If they lose enough money, the program might get canceled for good. In addition, the burned-out roadside speed trap cameras are now unable to write gotcha speeding tickets. It's too bad these cameras have never been on the ballot in D.C. or Maryland, because in several places where speed or red light cameras were on the ballot, they were overwhelmingly defeated. No ballot, then bullet, I guess.
For the past 64 years, the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia has been graduating assassins, dictators, and death squad leaders to do the dirty work of the elite in Latin America. The taxpayer-funded SOA has left a trail of violence and suffering in every country where its graduates have returned. Hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans have been tortured, raped, assassinated, disappeared, displaced, and massacred by those trained at the SOA. Enough is enough. Every year, thousands gather in Georgia to protest U.S. military involvement in Latin America. Join us at the gates of the SOA this November to honor the victims, celebrate the resistance, and pressure our government to shut down the school once and for all. From November 18th to 21st, we will have live concerts, speakers from around the world, street theater, workshops, and more. For more information on how you can stand with us to end the injustice, visit SOAW.org or call 202-234-3440.